And welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Yechezkel Perek Lamed Beis, the 32nd chapter of Yechezkel. And this is a very powerful chapter. It is the last of this section of Yechezkel. Yechezkel is divided into three major sections, and this section is the end of the second section where Yechezkel addresses the nations of the world around Israel. This is the fourth Perek, which is addressing Egypt. Egypt gets a large share of the focus, and part of the reason that is because Egypt really is the last superpower, essentially, which remains before the Babylonians, and in whom Israel put a lot of trust. So whether they require a lot of reminding in and of themselves, or the Jews require a lot of reminding that Egypt is not what they look like or will be, that is, there seems to be a lot of focus on that. It is interesting to notice that the two prophecies which are found in this perek happen after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The first one is dated Bishtei Esrei Shana, the 12th year since the Golos of Yoyachin. And the second prophecy, which is found in the middle of the Perek, is also Bishtei Esrei Shana, the 12th year, that's in Pasuk Yud Zayin. Which means to say that this is the period of time where, historically speaking, we're talking about the period where Gedaliah ben Achikam becomes the governor of Judea, and there's a rebellion against him, and he is killed, and there's a debate among the remaining Jews as to whether to stay and pay taxes to the Babylonians or run and flee to Egypt. And Yirmiyahu and Baruch ben Neriah are overruled, and they are taken as prisoners, essentially, by the Jews under Yochanan ben Kareach and the mob down to Egypt, which Yirmiyahu warns will be a terrible thing. At the same time, concurrently, Yechezkel is busy giving the prophecies against Egypt. So just to augment that notion that the safety is to be found in Egypt. Whether or not the Jews were able to hear these prophecies, we don't have documentation of this, but nonetheless, this is clearly augmenting what Yirmiyahu is trying to say in the land of Israel this time. Let's take a quick look at the prophecies themselves. The first section runs from Pasuk Aleph to Yud, and in this section, he now gives what sounds like a similar mashal, where he talks about Egypt being ketanim bayamim, this tanim, which we saw could be a crocodile or some sort of sea creature, which is found in the seas, which would vatagach b'naharosov, vatidlach mayim baraglecho, vatirpoisvata naharosom, that it would sort of move its feet around and churn up the mud, whether that's a sign of power, whether it's a sign of attacking others, but it seems like this is Egypt in its prime. But Hashem says, I'm going to spread my net for rasti, olecho es rishti bikalamim rabim, ve'elucho becherem, and I'm going to take you out into my trap, and I'm going to spread you onto the face of the field, and you're going to be eaten. You're going to be the food of all the birds of the heaven, and I'm going to the beasts of the earth are all going to eat you, and you're going to be dragged around. It's a disgusting description of like the rotting flesh, which will be left all over the fields and the hills. And at that point in time, v'kisisi v'kiseisi b'chabo ischo shomayim v'gdarti eskoich vehem. I'm going to cover in the stars and the luminaries in the sky, shemesh banan achasenu v'yarech lo ya'ir ora, and there will no longer be light from the skies. And at this point, v'ashimoisi olecho amim rabim v'malchehem yis'aru olecho sa'ar b'ofefeich arbi al peneihem. And all the nations who trust you are going to be in terrible fear because of the sword that I raised in your face. So just a very interesting description of the destruction of Egypt. Obviously, the metaphor is being removed from its natural habitat in the water. So what's going on over here? So the Malbim points out a very interesting thing. He says that usually when you're trying to get fish from the river with a net, you can only get the small ones. The really big fish are almost impossible to get out with a net. It's very hard to pull them out of the river. So Hashem says, my trap is not going to be pulling you out of the river. I'm going to entice you to fight outside of Egypt. I'm going to entice your army to make a bad military decision and go fight the Babylonians outside of their land, which is going to be the trap which will actually endanger you because you're no longer near your safety and security. What's this whole business about covering the stars and the sky being darkened? So the Mitzvot David says, very simple. What happens is the larger a flame is, when you extinguish it, the larger the smoke is, meaning the more smoke there is. So Egypt, you're a very powerful flame in the area. I'm going to extinguish you, but because you're such a vast flame, you're such a fire, there's going to be so much smoke, it's going to sort of symbolically cover the sky, which shows how much of a destruction occurred when you were extinguished. The Malbim points out that this might be more metaphysical in the sense that the Egyptians certainly believed in the star signs, and they believed that their star signs were more powerful than those around them. So Hashem says, not only am I going to destroy you, but I will make sure and ensure that your star signs will also be diminished. I think just a interesting reflection is the words used over here do seem to be similar to the biblical plague of Makas Choshech, which we saw already afflicting Egypt earlier on, which many of the Farshim say was the worst of the Makos. And it's interesting that it's sort of being, we're using that same kind of imagery over here in the latter destruction of Babel. The next section is pretty short. It goes from Yud Aleph to Tes Zion. In this section, it's pretty explicit who the enemy is, and that is Babel. We've seen a similar kind of pattern earlier on, a couple prakim back, with a sort of metaphoric river idea, picture, and then moving into the specifics. And here we have the sword of Babel is being described, how the Babylonians are going to come, they're going to bring their armies, and they're going to, you know, shadadu eskon Mitzrayim, they're going to simply despoil all of Egypt, kill the people, and it's going to be that you will no longer be able to move your feet in the muds of your rivers, and I'm going to set the sun on your rivers, and you besitias eretz Mitzrayim shemama v'nashama eretz mimla'a b'hakoy siyas kol yoshveba, and I'm going to make it a desolate land, and you'll know I'm Hashem. At the end of the section, he says, "Kinahi." This is a lamentation. "V'uk v'koinenuha," and they will lament it. "B'noisa goyim to koinenu asa al Mitzrayim v'al kol hamonata koinena oisa n'um Hashem nakem." And all the nations' daughters will lament this. So the practice in those days is that the ladies would be the ones to lament and to cry and sing about this. And so all the nations will lament Egypt when this happens. The Malbim points out that looking back on this part of the parak, you'll notice that there's three stages of destruction, which we can trace historically to this point. One is Egypt being lured out to be destroyed in the first battle, and then the Babylonians coming to Egypt and despoiling it. And the last one is the land being completely laid waste, which are three stages in the destruction of the Babylonians. Finally, in the last section, runs from Yud Zayin all the way to the end, Lamed Beis, which is essentially half the parak. It's a new prophecy around the same time. It's in the same year, just a couple months later. We are told that Yechezkel is supposed to talk to Egypt. And there's a very striking image, which is the following. Ben Adam Nehe al Hamon Mitzrayim Horidehu, Va'eso V'nois Goyim Adirim El Eretz Tachtio Esyardevo. Are you going to go now, like the rest of the nations, to those who descend to the pit? The pit we're referring to over here is the grave. And his taunt is, Mimino Amta Redov V'Hashkova Es Arelim. Who do you think you're better than? Go and lie down with those who are uncircumcised. And he goes on to say, you know, look at all the other nations, and look how many were killed, and look how many went to the pit. Shamashur, Ukol Kala. Look at the Assyrians in Pasuk Chof Beis. Sivivosav, Kavirosav. Look at all their graves, all of those who were butchered and who went into their pits. Sham Elam, Vukol Amonav, Sivivosav, Kavirosav, in Pasuk Chof Dalet. There's Elam who was also butchered and thrown into the pits. And again, later on, we see Shama Edom in Pasuk Chof Tes. There's Edom and all its Nisieha, all of their princes, Asher Nosnubi, Vurosam, Eschalele, Akherev. All these powerful nations, the Nesichei Tzafon and Pasuk Lamed, all the princes of the north, all of them are in the pit. And so therefore, at the end of this parak, he says, in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Oysom yir'e paro v'nicham al kol hamona chalalei cherev paro v'chelo in umar shem alakim. Paro, take a look at this. Should this be a consolation to you that you see everybody else has been murdered before you because Hashem desired to be all the nations that disagreed with me, all the nations who stood up against me? So it's a very interesting description here. One thing to notice is that in this half parak, there seems to be a parallel between Arelim, which is the uncircumcised individuals, and those who are killed. Certainly, the nations of the world, unlike Israel at this time, were uncircumcised. But Rabbi Yigal Ariel, in his Pirush on Yechezkel, which is called Lev Chadash, suggests that, you know, the lack of circumcision is a lack of, we'll call it, of purifying the body, just living a completely materialistic lifestyle. And the materialistic lifestyle which is being led over here is what is ultimately likened to that which will be depleted and very much, we'll call it, limited materially. That means to say that everything to do with not fixing up and not fixing up yourself spiritually, living in a completely materialistic setting, is likened to a lifetime which has an end and death in this section of the parak. Very interesting descriptions over here. The last thing just to point on over here is that when you look at all these prakim, we've finished four prakim which focus solely on Egypt. you have to ask yourself, like, why so many? Like, why does Egypt get so much so much airtime? And the Diat Mikra points out that it seems to be. He says, well, he quotes the parasha in Parshas Miketz, Al Hishanos Nevoes Apuranus, Al Mitzrayim, Efshar Likra B'Shinuyim Mesuyamim Es Aperek Apasuk Sheyosef Omar Bizmano LeParo. We can go back to what Yosef said to Paro. Val Hishanos HaChalom El Paro Pamaim Ki Nachon HaDavar Meim Elokim Mamaher HaElokim Asusar. Why did Paro get two dreams of the same thing? Why was it cows and grains? And the answer is because it was happening imminently. It was about to occur. So maybe the fact that all these nevuos are being given is to indicate that this is something immediate. It's not something in the far off future. And this is important so that the audience, who is Egypt, and the secondary audience, who is Israel, will realize there is no hope in trusting Egypt. They have to trust in Hashem. And the countries that Israel trusted more in got more focus. That's why Egypt has more time than Moab, Ammon, Edom, and the Philistine. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.